Welcome to another episode of the Star Trek Discovery Podcast. I'm Brian.
And I'm Adam.
And we are with a couple of very special guests this time around. We're doing a little bit of a 1A roundtable. And the first person, if you've been listening to our podcast, you definitely know from his incredible voicemails, Mark Decote. From Solo Talk Media.
How you doing, guys?
We're good. And I must say, for all of your voicemails, I give you the Showcase Award. I think you probably got that every episode.
That's the only reason I do it, Brian. I don't care about this stupid show that we're watching. I just want that award that you're handing out.
And our other guest... sort of, but we'll get to that in a second. If you have been listening to my other podcast, which is The Walking Dead Talk Through, you would know this person. We have Ruthie.
Hello.
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 I don't even have to play my I'm Ruthie sound effect.
Oh, my goodness.
All right. Well... first of all, we have a ship-wide announcement, so we're going to start off with that. And I am going to give it to Adam for this.
Thank you, Brian. Well, we've got a bit of a programming change-up. I wanted to announce to everybody that, unfortunately, due to life getting in the way, this will actually be my last appearance as a co-host on the show. At least for the foreseeable future. It's been a great run so far, but, you know, there's only so many hours in the day and so much time to dedicate, and life has pulled me away from the microphone and in other directions. So it's a sad thing to leave the show. I love doing it. I love working with you, Brian, but I've got some other things I need to take care of. But the good news is we do have a co-host lined up, right?
That's correct. And before we announce who it is, I will just say, first of all, that it's been a great working with you as well, Adam. You know, the podcast has been going beyond my expectations. And, you know, it's really sad to see you go. Aww. And you, too, deserve a Showcase Award. For all the work that you've done on this, certainly if it wasn't for you, Adam, this podcast right now would not exist because I couldn't do it at the start because of the workload with The Walking Dead. But anyway, it is very bittersweet, but I've already said why it's bitter, but now why it's sweet. So the new co-host of the Star Trek Discovery podcast is... Ruthie!
Yay!
So, Ruthie and I have been working on podcasts together now for over 3 years. We started The Walking Dead Talk Through together, and it's good to actually talk about a show that Ruthie actually loves again.
Yep.
Yeah, so... if I can't do the podcast with Adam anymore, Ruthie was obviously my first choice. In fact, I will say that I was begging her to do the Star Trek podcast for years, and it never worked out. But now we get to talk Star Trek together, so I'm really happy. And, you know, it's sad to see Adam go, but I think we will be in good hands with Ruthie. So, as far as change of format. I'll just say that the Walking Dead talkthroughs format is the same as the Star Trek Discovery podcast format, so we probably won't change much. So, except for this episode, which is more of a roundtable discussion. So I'll start it off and I'll ask you guys, so what were your expectations of Star Trek Discovery before it started airing? Mark, I'll start with you.
Well, expectations, to be honest, I didn't have a lot because I purposely tried to avoid anything other than I saw the announcements of who was going to be on the show, but even their characters. I knew that Sonequa Martin-Green was going to be the lead, but I didn't look in or I didn't research any of what character she would be playing or who else would be playing what. I just knew that it was this ship called the Discovery. I knew that she was the first officer and that was it. So I purposely avoided things going into this series because I wanted to be surprised by it. And I was very, very pleasantly surprised at how good. Actually, I shouldn't say I was surprised. I was expecting it to be good, but it was more than I expected in this case. But all the stuff like Comic-Con and those, I purposely tried to avoid those. I did look at some stills of the ships and that, but most of the announcements and all the blogs and reviews for people that had advance notices and spoiler free stuff, I avoided all that until it actually aired to see what the show was all about. Except for you guys, I did listen to your couple of podcasts beforehand, but you guys didn't really know what the show was going to be about either at that point. So that was about it for me, but I am very, very happy with the way it's turning out so far.
All right. Ruthie, what about you?
Kind of the same, actually. I was very trepidatious, I guess, about how it was going to be because it's been a while since it's been on TV and I just, you know, I wasn't really sure. And so I was really nervous about it. And so I kind of avoided what, like Mark said, I kind of avoided all the stuff. I didn't really, I think I maybe watched a trailer one time, but I didn't really pore over every detail or anything. So I didn't really know what to expect, but I pretty much, I just was praying it wouldn't suck.
And I know Adam and I have talked about this, but for listeners that haven't heard us talk about it, Adam, what about you?
I was somewhere in between Mark and Ruthie, actually. It's a new Star Trek show, so of course I was excited for it, but the one thing that gave me pause was that it seems like Star Trek is in a bit of an identity crisis. So before the show came on, I wasn't sure how much was going to be new in a good and exciting way and how much was going to be new in a we're turning our back on our legacy kind of way. So by the time the show hit the air, I'd seen all the press junkets and they were hyping all the accomplishments and achievements of having the first African-American female lead. And they weren't focusing on the captain this time. And there was the first openly gay character and all this stuff. By the time the show actually hit the air, I was just ready to take it on its own merits and try not to get sucked into all the press junket stuff. Because I feel like, especially when you're passionate about the franchise heading into a new chapter of it, it's too easy to let your preconceptions taint your view of the product.
Yeah, very true.
I have to say also, I was a little concerned about it being set in the time frame that it is, because I kind of feel like, even though I love Enterprise, I sort of feel like some of the problems that show ran into was doing a little bit too much retcon.
Fourth season especially.
Yeah.
Yeah, I was worried about that because, I mean, you know, the future is vast and they could just have gone a little bit further into the future and it could have been a whole new thing and no one would have cared because it's all new. But when you go into the past, there are certain established things that every Trekkie knows and that's just the way it is. And when you start trying to tell other stories, it can get tricky.
That was one of the bold decisions with the series, is to put it this close to the original series, given that that was the first Star Trek ever. It's a 50-year-old plus, you know, series at this point. So the vision of the future from the 1960s is very hard to match up to modern day sensibilities. And yet here we are with this show that's supposed to be part and parcel, especially if you've read the book. It actually features the Enterprise and Spock working alongside Giorgio and the Shenzo. So it was a tough decision on their part to put those two alongside each other, because the two really do have a hard time matching up. And yet now they've got the storytelling where they have to find a way that both can coexist.
Yeah, I kind of engulfed myself in everything I could find out about the show, like I kind of do. And the one thing, you know, I'd heard about it being 10 years before Enterprise and all that. And the one thing that really made me wonder after the first trailer, the first like actual trailer, not the one, there was one from I think a year ago where they had, you know, just like a flyby of the ship. But I think it came out in May, the trailer that actually had some footage from the pilot. And we saw the Klingons, and I'm like, those don't look like Klingons to me. And I was taken aback. But I figured, you know, the more I saw about it, I kind of thought, okay, it's a visual reboot. And a lot of the things that they've done, I mean, if you think about it, like, if it looked like the old Enterprise, we'd be kind of going like, well, that looks kind of dumb. The old, yeah. You know, the old fans would love it. And there still is, you know, you can see all the fan shows that, like Star Trek Continues, for example, which is an amazing kind of tribute to the original series. I don't know if you guys have ever seen it, but, it's really well done. But I don't think I would want CBS to make that show. It makes sense that it looks different. And I still think to this day that I didn't see the need to change the look of the Klingons. And I still don't. And I just finished a rewatch. Actually, I've done two rewatches in the past week of it, preparing for this episode. And I still don't get the need to remake the Klingons. And I guess this is a good segue into the next question. So what do you guys think about the Klingons?
Well, in my opinion, yeah, I agree. I don't like the looks of the new Klingon, but I'm not really hanging on to that. Like, you know, I've since I've started watching the show, I've been reading and following up and watching YouTube videos and all sorts of stuff and listening to your podcast. And there is a lot of people putting hate on it. And personally, I don't like the looks of the new Klingon, but I just say, okay, that's what they wanted them to look like. I'm just going to go with it. Mm-hmm. It's not my preference. It's not what I would have done, but hey, we've got Star Trek on TV again.
Yeah,
I'm not going to let one little thing like the look of the Klingon ruin the show for me, which it seems like it is ruining the show for a lot of people. And that is what I don't get.
Yeah.
I mean, get over it, people. This is what they want the Klingons to look like. They still are Klingons acting like Klingons. Just imagine these are Klingons.
Yeah.
And let it go from there.
Yeah. Ruthie, what about you?
Oh, I hate the look of the new Klingons with a fiery passion. However, that's the way it is. There's nothing I can do about it. So I'm trying to be okay with it.
Yeah.
I feel like you feel also that it was a completely arbitrary and pointless change for no other reason that I can think of than to just, we want to do something different.
Yeah.
Or we want to make it different for really no reason, honestly. Right. I can understand. Here's how I feel about Klingons. I can understand the change from the original series to the Next Generation and the movies. I can't remember which one it happened in first, if it was
Star Trek the Motion Picture was the first one that had new look Klingons. And then they changed slightly.
Those were weird.
Yeah, they changed slightly from that to like Star Trek 3.
I guess I meant the one where they became the ones that are in the Next Generation. Yeah. I can't remember if it was in the movie first, because I remember Christopher Plummer in his makeup quite clearly. I just, at this point in time, I can't remember. Anyway, the point
Star
is
Star Trek 3 was where they really solidified the look.
Right. Yeah.
Christopher Lloyd and the whole crew. Yeah.
Yeah. They were pretty much.
Yeah. So anyway, whichever year that movie was released in, I don't know. But the point is, I feel like at that point in time, that look was used through so many other, you know, that was used through the rest of those movies. It was used in The Next Generation. It was used in Deep Space Nine. It was used in Voyager to the extent that there were Klingons on Voyager.
Mm-hmm.
I don't really see the need to change it. Unlike with technology, like when you are looking at the original series, it looks dated.
Right.
And not just because of the, you know, creature makeup or whatever you want to say about that, but the technology itself looks like a version of the future from the past. And mm-hmm. I feel like it's okay to make those kinds of changes and update technology so that now a future, like looking into the future from right now, looks different than looking into the future from 1960. So I don't see anything wrong with that. It doesn't really bother me. However, the Klingon change bothers me a great deal because I feel like they just did it to be, I don't know why, just we want to do it. So we're going to do it. We don't want to make them like this. So we're going to make them like this. I'm like, that's completely dumb.
Yeah.
Yeah. There's a thing to be said about, like I said, there was integrity in the designs of the Klingons. The thing with sci-fi or any sort of fictional sort of genre is once you've done your world building and you've actually created the look and the feel of your universe, you're beholden to that look and feel. Like, yeah.
Leave it alone.
How many of you here have seen Blade Runner 2049?
Me.
Okay. Did you notice that Atari and Pan Am are still big deals in that movie?
Yep.
It's because when the first one came out, the vision of the future in the 1980s included those companies. So rather than changing the big companies for the sequel, they doubled down and they said, no, in our universe, these companies are still the big deal. And I wish Star Trek would do that too and have some pride in the equity they've established with the look of the Klingons, the whole race. You know,
right.
Audiences recognize that. And there's no equity in these new Klingons. They just look like generic aliens that could come from any franchise.
Okay, and
Go ahead.
But is the look of the Klingon deterring from the story that they're presenting? Are when you're watching the show, are you saying, I don't like these Klingons, so it makes the story not as good? Or is it just you don't like the look and you wish they had done differently, but the story is still just as good? Like do you think the story would be any better if the Klingons look like the Klingons you expect them to look like?
I think it would be easier to focus on the story because they're telling us that this is a familiar element, but it's not familiar.
It's not. Yeah, that's exactly right. To me, it's distracting. And I can't tell if it's a good story if I'm too distracted by looking at the Klingon that doesn't look like a Klingon to me. And I mean, you're just kind of invalidating the photo I have with a Klingon when I went to the Las Vegas Star Trek experience. Thank you very much. You know, even non-Star Trek fans can look at that picture and say, you are in a picture with a Klingon, you know?
Yeah. And they can't do that now because, you know, yes, they look Klingon-ish, but there are so many differences there, you know, especially.
So many differences.
Yeah, especially the no hair that.
And the shape of their dome.
Yeah, I was going to say, pointy head. You know, it was never a thing with the Klingons before. And, you know, I've even, going back and doing a rewatch, they even refer to them in a few places as pointy head, you know. So that was never a thing. And suddenly that is a thing. And, you know, to answer my own question, I found it distracting. I don't find that it, has any bearing on the story. I mean, I've accepted it now, but it seemed to me like Brian Fuller, who was the original, you know, creator, just decided I'm going to put my own stamp on this and I'm going to change them without any real reason for it. Now, I've heard that there are reasons for it, but so far in the first 9 episodes, I haven't actually seen those reasons. In the actual story, it just seems like, you know, we wanted to make the skulls more, you know, and necks too, because their necks are all kind of, you know, reptilian. I guess that's what you could say. The Klingons look more reptilian in this version than they've ever looked before.
So if in season 1B, when it comes back on January 7th or whatever, whenever it comes back, if they all of a sudden drop an explanation as to why the Klingons look this way, then is everything going to be okay after that point? Are we going to say, oh, okay, well, now this makes sense. We're okay with the way the Klingons look?
I think for me...
No, we're on a podcast. No. That won't happen.
I think for me, I've accepted their look. It just seems to me that it wasn't necessary. That's my whole thing.
It was ego-driven.
Yeah.
No, and I agree with you, Brian. It's the same thing. I've accepted the look. I don't like the look. I don't think it needed to be done, but I've gotten past that and just say, okay, those are Klingons. Let me, I want to know the story. And I've said it in my feedback before, but honestly, I don't like the Klingon side of the story. Every time it shoots over to the Klingons, it's kind of like, oh, I want to get back to Discovery or whatever else they're doing. I don't really care for the Klingon side of the story, but it's not the Klingons themselves that are causing that effect for me. It's the storyline, whether the Klingons look like traditional Klingons or not. It's the storyline. I'm not really enjoying that side of the story.
Yeah.
I guess for me, Klingons were my absolute favorite ever. Like, Worf is my favorite character. I think of all the characters that exist in the Star Trek universe, Worf is my favorite. And so for me, it's a bit more than that. It's more than just, oh, they changed it. I don't like it. I mean, I had a visceral reaction when I saw the Klingons. I was like, oh, why did you do that? And it's, I'm, like I said, I'm trying to get over it, but I'm irritated.
Yeah.
See, I had a bigger issue with how come Starfleet is wearing those metal badges on their insignias on their uniform. And then 10 years from now, they're going to go to sewn-on patches. Sewn on. I had a bigger issue with that than what the Klingons look like.
Yeah.
To each his own, because I could care less about that.
I mean, to me, the color of the uniforms wasn't a problem because it was kind of a throwback to Enterprise, because the Enterprise uniforms were very similar in color. But yes, in 10 years time, well, even less than that, because the Cage, was wearing similar uniforms, and that is around the same time as this time frame, so the original pilot of the original series.
Cage took place 10 years before the original series?
Yes, roughly. Yes.
I didn't realize that.
Yeah. So at some point, the Enterprise is out there wearing pajamas. Mm-hmm. and how they're supposed to explain that, I don't know. At this point, I have less problems with it. Just when I take it into context of every other change that's been made, I'm okay with it, because for one thing, there's nothing to say that these weren't the uniforms. And we also saw from the first movie in the JJ verse, the Kelvin timeline, they were also wearing blue uniforms, and that was theoretically ahead of, or should I say, before this time frame, So although the timeline gets obviously pretty screwed up, those uniforms would essentially be prime timeline uniforms, and they were also blue. So I didn't have a problem with that. Now the badges, yeah. And it seems kind of dumb that they go from that to sewn badges. And for that matter, they drop the swoosh or arrowhead or whatever you call it. Cause in the original series era, they were all wearing different insignias. But again, I'm okay with that. To me, if that's the worst thing that you could say about this new show, that's pretty minor.
Agreed.
Yeah, they've tried to do some retcon on this, but it's in the book Desperate Hours, and their general explanation is that the Enterprise is one of the newest ships in the fleet, and the Shenzhou is one of the oldest ships in the fleet. Now, why that explains the lack of updates to the uniforms of the crew members, I don't know, but most of the changes they just try to discount by having them be ships from different eras. And Spock even remarks how it's amazing to him how frequently and fickle humans tend to be with their aesthetic choices and how quickly things can change.
Yeah. All right. So let's move on. Ruthie and I obviously know the work of Sinequa Martin Green because, you know, she was Sasha on The Walking Dead. What have you guys thought of Burnham, the character, and the fact that she's essentially, you know, the lead on the show, and that it's not the captain that is the lead of the show? Mark?
Well, I like that take on it. I always found that in the older shows, yes, you could always say, like, you know, Kirk was the lead. But in The Next Generation, even though Picard was the captain and he was a lot there, there was a lot of, like, to say he was the lead character, I'd say would be a little bit hard to do, because there was a lot of episodes where, of course, the captain stays on the ship and the away teams would be doing whatever. So in that case, it wasn't the same. But I love this perspective where the captain is a secondary character, and she's doing a really good job. I didn't know what to expect of her character. As I said earlier, going into this, I didn't know anything about the mutiny or any of that stuff, but I think she's doing a really good job. I liked her on Walking Dead, and I don't know if space or anything, it did anything about rankings or that, but we just last week here in Canada, there's a TV show called Inner Space that is a daily show, and it talks about all stuff geeky and nerdy and that. And just last week, they had their top 30 sci-fi stars of 2017, and Sinequa Martin Green was the number one top sci-fi star for 2017 because of her role in Discovery. Just on a side note, Sharad Latif, who plays Ash Tyler, was also in the top 30, and so was Doug Jones, who plays Saru. He was the three of them from Discovery made the top 30 list of top sci-fi stars for the year. But no, I really enjoy her character. As I said, I didn't know what to expect of her. I do find she is playing the Vulcan a little bit too much. I know she's raised by Vulcans, but I always was led to believe that the Vulcan genealogy helped them suppressing their emotions. That's why Spock always had to fight, because he was only half Vulcan. He had to fight with himself to keep his emotions in check. Well, she's fully human. I would expect to see a little bit more emotions coming through from her, and maybe we will as the season progresses. But it just seems to me that in this timeline, she's been with Starfleet for I don't know how long, but it's been a while for her to be a first officer on the Shenzhou. So for her emotions to still be the way they are now, I would have liked to see a little bit more out of her. But time will come.
Ruthie, what about you?
Well, I like her. I mean, I've always liked her. I enjoyed her on The Walking Dead. I disagreed with anyone who said that she wasn't really that great or whatever. I kind of sometimes thought that the character she played wasn't that great, but I always thought she was fantastic. And I think she is doing really well as Michael Burnham. And, I'm enjoying her performance. And I guess to me, I would say that I don't really think that she is, I should say her character, not Sasha or Sinequa Martin Green. Sorry. I feel like the way that she's acting is completely believable for me, because I don't know. I do think it's possible for human beings to cut themselves off emotionally. And especially if you are, because honestly, I feel like humans as a race are very adaptable. And I think that we adapt to whatever situation we're put in. And if she was put in that situation where it was basically socially unacceptable to portray emotions, then, and I can't remember how old she was when she was, adopted by, Sarah.
She was young.
Yeah, I mean, if you're in your formative years and that's how you were basically raised, and I mean, if that's how you were nurtured, then that's probably how you're going to act for a good long while. I mean, it goes back to that nature versus nurture argument that is it one or the other? Obviously with Vulcans, we think that it's nature, but I'm honestly not so sure about that. I think that yes, that's the way that Spock was, and I think that they initially set it up to be that way, but I don't know. I kind of feel like they're not necessarily better at it or genetically predisposed to it or something. I feel like they have just done that. Mm-hmm. And I think that it's because, if I'm remembering my Vulcan history correctly,
it seems like you are.
Right. They used to be, I mean, they were an incredibly warlike species at one point in time. And because of that, they've decided as a race that we are no longer going to act on our emotions and all that kind of stuff. And we're going to suppress them, and we're going to function as a society and as a world based solely on logic and this, that, and the other. And so that's what they do. And, I think it's through their mental abilities and all that kind of stuff that they are able to, suppress their emotions. Now, physically, she is human, not a Vulcan. So she should not be able to whoop a Klingon's ass.
Yes, very true.
Yeah, the old trope of Klingons getting their butts whooped. Yeah, that happens all the time.
Right? Maybe it's this newfangled version of Klingons. They're just not as tough.
Well, I don't know. Worf got his butt kicked plenty of times. Even
by Data.
By Data, yeah. True enough.
Don't be dissing on Worf.
Oh, I'm not. I'm like you. I mean, Worf. I don't know if Worf was my favorite character, but he certainly was up there. And the Klingons were definitely my favorite, you know, species. I always was look forward to any Klingon episodes that would come up. I think the Vulcans were more nurture than nature, except for their physical strength, because they were a warlike race, and I think that explains the Romulans a lot. That's, you know, kind of,
yes,
you know, the Romulans are an offshoot of the Vulcans, and if they had,
right,
you know, stayed militaristic, that's how the Vulcans would be. So,
yeah, I think they diverged at one point in time, I don't know, a million years ago or something, a huge long time ago.
Yeah.
The two of them diverged, and the Vulcans decided we're going to be logical, and the Romulans were like, nope.
The teachings of Surok, it was Surok that brought logic, and that's what has made the difference there. So I buy the behavior of Burnham, but I know when I was watching it the first way through, especially the first couple of episodes, it seemed kind of jarring, especially, you know, when she committed mutiny. That seemed like, oh, that's a little far to go. But when I go back and watch it, it makes more sense. When you watch the progression over 9 episodes, you can see it that much more. And I think she's much more human now after the 9th episode than she was at first.
Yeah.
So, Adam, I didn't really get your opinion on that. What have you thought of Burnham so far?
I think the character is an intriguing one. One of the issues that makes the character so difficult, and I give all the credit in the world to Sonequa Martin-Green for playing it so well. The hard thing about trying to portray anyone Vulcan, partial or learned or otherwise, is that the character in general is supposed to be somewhat emotionless, but you still have to portray to the audience that there are emotions taking place underneath the surface.
Yeah.
And that's where Nimoy, like, he broke the mold by setting it, was you always knew that there was something going on inside of Spock, even though it wasn't visible on the outside. There was a subtext being communicated through the acting. And sometimes I think at points throughout the series so far, the writing has kind of failed the character a little bit, where they go straight robot when they want to bring out the Vulcan, and there's not enough of the human showing through or any sort of the conflicts going on there.
Agreed.
I would agree with that as well.
Sometimes yeah. She's almost like an android. Like, she just knows something that nobody else on the ship knows, or can, you know, calculate something that no one else can calculate, you know, when she was debugging code for Stamets, for example. So they take it. It's a little inconsistent in the writing, but as far as the performance, I think she's doing a phenomenal job with what she's given.
Yeah.
So if they can just level out with the way the character should behave, I think the acting will live up to it.
I agree.
I definitely agree with that. She is pretty spectacular.
Yeah. All right. Next, I want to talk about the captains on the show. And we could, you know, focus on Lorca, but I think first we want to just cover Giorgio and Michelle Yeoh's performance as Captain Giorgio. Start again with Mark. What did you think of that portrayal and Captain Giorgio as a Starfleet captain?
Well, we obviously didn't get much of her, but I did like her portrayal of a captain, but I also liked the way she was mentoring Michael, and she seemed to understand Michael a lot more than Lorca is. Lorca's getting in, he's learning a little bit about her, but you got the impression that Giorgio and Michael had been together for a long time and they really understood each other. But it was more that instant, not just captain and underling, but mentor, or almost like a mother-like figure for her, where she was able to take, like, she was good at command. She was a captain in Starfleet. She was good at command, but she had a way of dealing with her crew too, that was very, I guess, unique in a way, softer than a lot of the other captains we've seen before. But she was also stern and tough when needed. I wish we would have got more of her. I know that, like, I didn't watch a lot before the series, but it's kind of fun in retrospect, looking back at some of the interviews she did with a lot of people, like talking to her about, I'm talking about the actress now, but talking to her about her role on Star Trek. And of course, she couldn't divulge that she ends up dying within the first, what was it, one or two episodes.
Yeah.
And so it's kind of funny in retrospect, looking at that, like, you know, her talking about how great it is to work in this thing. And it's like, oh, yeah, but you died. I enjoyed her.
What about you, Ruthie?
I think they kind of let the cat out of the bag when they put her name in the credits as special guest appearance or something. I feel yes. like that was a huge mistake.
Spoiler. Because
I know. I knew right away. I was like, oh, great. She's not going to be here the whole season. And I was disappointed immediately because I really like Michelle Yeoh and I feel like she did a good job and I enjoyed her portrayal of Captain. I think that, I don't know, I think she did a good job. I liked her. I thought it was good.
Adam?
Yeah, she had a tall order because we don't get to know the character very much. So to have to jump into the role and try to inhabit it from the start without having any chance to really, like, build a familiarity, I think she did a great job with what she was given. She just didn't have a lot of time on screen to really get comfortable with who she was trying to be. I thought some of the banter on the bridge was a little forced. It seemed a little too casual for what should be a science / military vessel.
Yeah.
Especially because she did kind of vacillate between being by the book and all about procedure. And then, you know, she tried to, like, give a little quip or a wisecrack like Kirk might do or even Picard at times. So it could have been a little bit more consistent, but when you've only got, like I said, two episodes to really do anything with the character, you can't really ask her any better than what she gave you.
Yeah. But I felt that her character, even though we only saw her for that little bit of time and we really don't know anything about her, she felt like a character that had background, even though we never found out what that background was. It's, you know, You know what I'm getting at? There's some characters that you feel like they're there and they're only there for the purpose of delivering lines or whatever. I felt that Georgiou, there was some sustenance to her character. There's a backstory that I want to know more about and we'll never know. And we were never intended to know, but you got the feeling that there was that story that would have been a very interesting story.
Yeah. And another good thing that Michelle Yeoh did was she lent gravity to the role. Just by having her on screen, just the way she portrayed the character, you instantly respected her. You didn't have to buy in. Just her performance lent that gravitas.
Yeah.
Right. And I think that she, again, like you were saying, she had a tough job in that she had to basically make you form an opinion about her in a very short amount of time, whether it's I loved her or I hated her. I mean, both of those are super strong emotions and they're not, you know, they're not opposites. They're two sides of one coin, pretty much. And I feel like she did that, honestly. I think Michelle Yeoh did that because I liked her. I really liked her. And it was really mean that she was just gone so quickly.
Yeah, I thought that she did a really good, you know, role. She seemed to be a very seasoned captain. I think that seeing her, you know, later on as one of those five, you know, most recognized captains makes sense to me. Although it makes you wonder, like, why she decided to have such an old ship. They should have upgraded her. But I'm hoping that we're going to see more of her in flashback in the rest of the season. I don't know if we will or not. I don't have any inside knowledge or whatever on what we're going to see in these next six, but I'm hoping that we're going to see a little more about her character. But one captain that we're going to see a heck of a lot more of is Lorca. And so Mark, what do you think of Lorca and Jason Isaacs' portrayal of Captain Lorca?
Well, like my feedback's been saying, I don't know. I still don't know if we can trust him or not. I want to trust him. I think he's a very interesting character. I like his character, but I still don't know at this point whether or not we could trust the guy. I know he's a Starfleet captain, so that should give him some credit. But I think he has some agendas that are not being shared with anybody else. And it's one of the things that I'm enjoying with his character is all other Star Treks. I mean, it was always the captain was the person to look up to and respect. And again, usually the main character. And in this case, he's not the main character. And yes, he has the bars on his shoulder to give him the rank that you should be respecting. But is there something more to him that we don't know yet? And I find that very intriguing, and I really want to know more.
You answered the question I was going to follow up with. Is that a good thing or a bad thing? And clearly, for you, it's a good thing. Ruthie, what about you?
I also love Jason Isaacs. He is one of my favorite actors in almost everything I've seen him in. I'm like, yes, I love him. Just, woo. He plays such a good bad guy, and I feel like in this show, it's kind of like he's playing a Starfleet captain, which automatically makes you think good guy. But then he does these sort of underhanded manipulative things that sort of make you think bad guy. And it's very interesting to me to see a Starfleet captain portrayed in such a way. Because as Mark said, we're not really sure of his character and his intentions. And it's kind of fascinating to watch. And honestly, I kind of like that they're taking this direction.
Mm-hmm. Yeah. The interesting thing about his character, he strikes me as the type of guy who's always got the best of intentions, but his moral compass is a little skewed to where he could take some really horrific paths if he believes it's in the greater good. For example, I'm blanking on the name of his former ship.
The Buran,
correct. Yeah. You know, lone survivor. Captains usually go down with the ship, but in his mind, he justified his own survival. Those sorts of things. he seems, even as so far as letting Cornwell go.
Yep.
Yeah.
You know, he, in his mind, he was doing the right thing. So even though it was not a noble act, he felt that there was justification for doing so. You need those kind of people at times, but it's certainly not like any sort of captain we've seen before.
But the whole Cornwell thing. Yeah, there was justification, but justification for him. You certainly got the impression that, you know, that was just some fast thinking on his part. It's like, oh, you know, Sarek isn't available. Possibly deadly meeting. Let's send Cornwall out there because she's about to rat me out anyways. So let's kill two birds with one stone.
And then let's be by the book and not launch a rescue mission.
Yeah exactly.
Right.
Yeah.
And I think it goes back to also what what people say all the time, the villain never thinks they're the villain, right? The bad guy never thinks that they're the bad guy. They always think that they're doing things, they're doing the right things, and they're doing things for the right reasons and all that kind of stuff. He very well may think these are the things that we need to do to win this war, but it, and in his mind, he may feel like, even though it might be a little bit of megalomania, that he is the best one to win the war. And so therefore, by any means necessary, he needs to stay in command. So therefore, if this person is going to unseat him, he needs to make sure that she can't be in a position to do that. So therefore, she needs to go on this dangerous mission where she might die. So therefore, I'm not going to send a rescue mission for her because, you know, it goes back to his primary agenda, which is he feels he's the best one suited to win the war. And
see,
you know,
I don't know if he thinks he's the best one to win the war. I just think he is somebody who relishes conflict. And now that this war has started, he found a place. Because I know he was going up through the ranks of Starfleet when there was no war going on. But I think this war that started, it finally opened his eyes that, you know, he likes this conflict. He liked being the only ship that was able to attack and to be able to do all these things. You also look, he's got his own private shrine to all sorts of different things in his room. He's collecting stuff. So just like there's some people in the military today that, you know, they love the whole conflict of war. I have a feeling that that's his fuel. And the thought of Cornwell, whatever, doing something to him and he would be stuck behind a desk somewhere instead of out in on the front lines was just too much for him to take after getting a taste of what battle is like.
Yeah.
Right. I didn't necessarily mean that that's what he thought. I was just using that as an example.
Mm,
okay. Yeah.
Like if he thinks that he's the best one to do this, then you can explain away all of his other actions based on that primary objective that he has or whatever, that he thinks, you know, whatever his primary objective is, he can certainly explain away all these questionable things based on that one thing that he thinks is the right thing. So he mm-hmm. thinks he's a good guy, not a bad guy, but he's kind of like, well.
Yeah, they've done a great job crafting the mystery because so far we've seen the first big mystery was, you know, what's going on with the Discovery? Why is it such a mysterious ship? And it turns out that instead of having some weapon of mass destruction that they were hiding, it's just a new propulsion system. You know, so, and then you go on later in the series and you find out that he left his old crew to die. So that seems like a bad thing. But then he had an explanation for it. And then you even go to the end of 1A here and he clearly interrupted the jump coordinates for the final jump home, which seems like a villainous thing to do. But since every previous villainous act seems to have had a noble explanation, maybe he's got a justification for this as well. And it's just, it keeps the audience on the edge of their seats. So we're not really sure what to make of this guy.
Yeah. Mm-hmm.
Right.
Yeah. I tend to think that Lorca may be the best character on the show, both in how he's written and how he's portrayed. Like, performances aside, the combination of that, because we're sitting here 9 episodes in, still not completely knowing, you know, what makes this guy tick. And I find that fascinating, not to take a Spock thing, but he he's so well performed, I think, by Jason Isaacs. I think he's hitting it out of the park every time he's on screen. Mm-hmm. And since, Adam, you brought up the thing from the mid-season finale, you really want to know, okay, well, what did he intentionally send them into some, you know, maybe mirror universe or something? Or was that a mistake? Or was he just trying to send them back to Starbase 46? I don't know. But you have to keep guessing with this guy, and I love that. It's so different, but at the same time, I think it's makes the show so much more interesting that you really don't know where this guy, where this guy's going. And, it's so different than, you know, what we're used to, but at the same time, I think it works so well.
Mm-hmm. Agreed.
Yeah. I agree with that too. It's like like you're saying too. I think we're all saying, he's just, It's so different from the normal way that we're used to seeing a Starfleet captain act and be portrayed, I guess. It's kind of like, ooh, what's he going to do next?
Yeah, he's probably closest to Sisko, I would say, compared to any of the previous captains, because, you know, Sisko had a bit of an edge. You know, he dragged the Romulans into the Dominion War. So that was a bit of an edge there, but not to this extent. And some of it is understandable because, you know, he's kind of got these war wounds. And I don't just mean his eyes. I mean, you know, he's acting like someone that, you know, has some emotional scars from the war. And at the same time, you know, he's a very effective captain, but he's not effective in the ways that we're used to. He manipulates people. I mean, he even manipulated Cornwell, you know, and we see him do it again with Stamets. You know, oh, we wouldn't ask you to take the Spore Hub drive to Starbase 46. We wouldn't ask you that. And of course, you know, that's exactly what Stamets needs to hear to volunteer. You know, so what about some of the other characters on the show? We have Tilly, we have Tyler and Vok. Well, Tyler maybe I kind of tipped my hand there, but we have, we'll talk about him separately, I think, but we have Tilly, we have Stamets, we have, Saru, and, you know, some of the other very minor characters. What do you think of some of the other characters, Mark?
Well, let me talk about one character that we didn't get a whole lot of. And I just want to go back to, we were talking earlier about Captain Georgiou. And on the Discovery, we had Commander Landry, who was the head of security.
Oh, yeah.
That we had for two episodes. And there is a character that didn't feel like she had a background behind her or a story. And I didn't really care. Like, seeing her, I didn't really care about her background. Unlike Georgiou, that I said, even though we only had her for a brief instant, or what was it, two episodes, I think, in three with a flashback. Mm-hmm. But that was a character I wanted to know more, where Landry, it's like, no. So that was a character on that we had that really I couldn't care less about. And but some of the other characters, at first, I didn't care for Tilly. When we first got introduced to Tilly, I did not like her at all. But she grew on me as this half of the season went. I even in one of my feedbacks, I thought that, oh no, she's going to be the Jar Jar Binks of this series. And I'm glad that I was proven wrong. She's turning out to be a good, funny, she has some good one-liners, and I'm enjoying her character. She's bringing something. You can see that she is brilliant. So I'm enjoying her. Stamets is another one. It's his character has really changed over the first like half of the season. At the beginning, he was very cold and he was very, he wasn't a very likable character, but then you start to learn more and more about him. And then you start to realize what he's all about. And, towards the end, I felt bad for him. I liked him. I enjoyed his performances and all that. Saru's the one that I'm kind of, I love Doug Jones as an actor, and he's doing a wonderful job with Saru. And I'm finding what's amazing is even with all the prosthetics and everything, the emotions that he can bring through are amazing. But I don't care for the position. I don't find Saru as a good first officer. And I actually have a theory that I think at some point, Michael Burnham, right now she doesn't have a rank. She's not part of Starfleet, I guess, now that she's a mutineer. I have a feeling that at some point she will get back in, and it's going to be because of Saru. We saw some parts in this episode where he was actually doubting himself. At one point, he asked the computer, you know, what makes a good officer? And then he asked the computer, you know, can you rank myself compared to these other people? And then he belayed that order, but he was doubting himself. And I have a feeling there's going to be something that's going to happen in the next half of the season where he's the first officer and Lorca might not be around, and Saru's supposed to take command, but he's not going to be confident enough. He's not going to know what to do. And he's going to turn to Burnham and ask her advice because she was a first officer. And I think that's going to be her back into Starfleet and get a rank. Might not be first officer, but I think that's how she's going to get her rank back, or a rank back. So that's kind of a theory that I have going in my head, is Burnham's going to get back in because Saru's not going to be up for the job, and he's going to turn to her knowing that she was an excellent first officer, a much better first officer than he will ever be. Mm-hmm. So,
yeah, I tend to think I'll just follow up that with, I think Burnham is going to get a pardon and is going to get her, I don't know if she'll become a commander again right off the bat, but I think she's going to gain a commission again. And I think she's done enough after this last episode to warrant it. She was able to kill Cole. Well, her actions brought the death of Cole. And she saved Cornwell and, you know, for the most part, did it single-handedly. So I think she's done enough that she's going to get a pardon. And I wouldn't be surprised if at some point she becomes captain of Discovery. Whether or not that's going to happen, you know, in season two or something like that, I don't know. But Ruthie, Saru, Tilly, Stamets, and any other characters that you want to talk about, what do you think?
I kind of feel the same, I guess, about Stamets. He was sort of a jerk, very abrasive, off-putting at first, but then honestly, it sort of feels like he kind of goes back and forth with his character. I mean, like in one episode, he's loosening up, but then in the next episode, he's abrasive again. So it's kind of like, what's really going on? I don't know if they're writing him uneven or what, but it does kind of feel a little uneven. I mean, I like him well enough, but it's just kind of like, okay. I don't know. He's just kind of there, I suppose. I like Tilly. I think I probably always liked Tilly because she's sort of that awkward, I guess, maybe representation of the audience character.
Yeah.
Sort of. Mm-hmm. And she, you know, was the first character on Star Trek to drop the F-bomb. So there's that. Saru, I don't really like. I think it's mainly because I don't really understand his character. I love Doug Jones. I think he's amazing. But the Saru character, it doesn't really make sense to me, honestly. He's, what do they call him? A prey to apex predators or something.
Yeah.
I mean, with all of the physical attributes that he has and capabilities, I don't want to meet those predators ever. So I mean, it doesn't make any sense to me. I feel like he should be an inferior character, and, you know, physically inferior, mentally inferior, all that stuff in order to be a prey species or whatever she called him. And that, you know, that doesn't make sense either, because is he supposed to kind of be emulating a cow or something? Because a cow is basically a prey species. I mean, they're vegetarians. They eat grass, and they're definitely not predators, and they've got the hooves like he has and all that kind of stuff. So I'm like, I don't understand that. I guess in the same way, if a cow were a biped, then they would also be physically superior to humans. But I don't know. I guess I just don't really understand it. But the way that he acts is also kind of, he's very one note, I guess. I mean, I suppose he's starting to change a little bit. Like what Mark was talking about with his desires to be a better captain and asking the computer what the rank the top five captains and what qualities do I share with them and how can I improve and blah, blah, blah. But I don't know. I kind of feel like you either can lead or you can't. It's not really necessarily something that you can be trained to do. Mm. I guess. I don't know.
Yeah.
Yeah. As much as I like Saru as a character, and I really do, and Doug Jones is doing a phenomenal job with him. If you're a bridge officer in Starfleet, I feel like you should excel at something. And we haven't really seen what his niche is yet. Does it feel like that to anybody else?
I agree. Yeah.
Well, he was supposedly a science officer prior to the Discovery. And I see him say lots of science officer-like things. But yeah, I agree with you.
Spock was a science officer.
True. It's very true.
Yeah. And his whole, like he has this one thing, now they're calling him his threat ganglia, or is that what they're calling him now?
Yes. Yeah.
But at the beginning of the series, he said that his species was bred to sense death. Do they sense death or do they sense threat? Because those things are popping out every episode.
Yeah.
And yet there's nobody dying.
Yeah.
But that's what he said at the beginning, was we were bred to sense death.
And I would say that his threat ganglia are horrifically unreliable, because there have been times when he should have had his threat ganglia, you know, standing at attention and nothing happened. And then other times when, you know, nothing's really going on and suddenly they pop out. So I don't think that they're a good representation of actual threats. I think it's
it's all in his head.
Exactly. It's all in his head.
He views Burnham as a threat. Ha ha ha. Very funny.
That's pretty good.
I did that on purpose. Anyway, he views Burnham as a threat, so every time he's around her, they pop out. And I'm like, she's only a threat to you, not to anyone else. Because honestly, I feel like at the time of her mutiny, she was doing what she thought was in the best interest of everyone based on the information that she had. The decision that she made was completely logic based. And it went against Starfleet, yes, but I kind of feel like she was desperate. And when a person is desperate enough, they will do crazy things like mutiny when maybe they wouldn't have ever done that before. But I feel like she really did think that that was the best and only way to handle Klingons. And of course, we know that if she actually had done that, they might have backed off, because they, you know, us, the audience, being able to see their side of things, like they're going to come at us with their "we come in peace" crap and all that stuff. And she was ready to come at them guns blazing, and they would have had to have been like, maybe we misjudged. But instead, it didn't turn out that way. And she's viewed as a, you know, mutineer starting the war and all that kind of stuff, which is, you know, crap. But yeah. I don't feel like he understands really what she did. And he just thinks that she was reckless and all this kind of stuff. And to me, I'm like, that was not being reckless, honestly.
Yeah. To me, I have to say this, that I wonder how she would have been treated had she not killed T'Kuvma. If she had instead kept the phaser on stun and had been able to capture him, you know, I tend to think that she would have not even gotten court-martialed. You know, she might have gotten a reprimand, but I don't know if she would have even gone to prison. It seemed to me that it was not to say that what she did was correct. I mean, tactically, it may have been correct, but certainly the way that she did it, I don't think was correct. But it just makes me wonder if she had been able to get Takuvma, if things would have ended differently for her, you know. So anyway, we didn't get too much from Adam on that question, so I'll throw it back to you, Adam.
Well, personally, I think since they can always do some course correction throughout the run of a series, I would like to see Saru's threat ganglia just go away. like I said, they're used inconsistently and they're extremely unreliable.
Yeah.
They don't really have the dramatic impact they should, because they never seem to work right. So yeah, Let's just get rid of them and focus on the character instead of, and frankly, as good as the graphics are, there's something that just, it never really fits in with the visuals either.
Yeah.
So let's just get away from that. Let the prosthetics do their job, because the makeup on him is exceptional.
Yeah.
And, move on from there.
Yeah. I think for me, I think Saru's the one that has worked the least, and it has nothing to do with the portrayal or the performance of Saru. It's just the way that he's written is not the best. I think he needs a little more dimension, and I'm hoping that we're going to get some in the second half. My favorite character has been Tilly. It still is. I just think that she's great. I think Mary Wiseman's really doing a great portrayal of her. I guess she's, your quintessential millennial, I guess. I think this is her first like major role. So I think she's doing a fantastic job, and I love her character. I loved her character right from the start. Stamets, I had a similar reaction to, I think, Mark and Ruthie, how, he was very, I've grown to like his character a lot more. I thought that he was very uppity and disagreeable at the start. And, I get a kick out of his character now. I like the transformation that he underwent. Speaking of transformations or potential transformations, let's get to the elephant in the room, and that is Tyler and perhaps Vok. What's the it's that one. I couldn't find the sound effect. So let's take them separately. So Vok, when Vok, showed up and, he was son of none. I thought that was great for what they, son of none. So I guess he's like an Immaculate Conception then. but the fact that, he really had no family and, came from nothing, I thought that he was a lot more interesting than Takuvma was. And then, so then he goes away, and then the very next episode we see Tyler, who's supposedly a POW 7 months in and has been under Laurel. And of course we have seen that Laurel was on the Ship of the Dead for 6 months. So what's the deal there? So let's I guess start it with Vok. And if Vok isn't Tyler, Mark, where do you think Vok is?
Thinking back over the season, I'm trying to remember anything memorable that Vok did, and I'm sorry, maybe it's just, as I said earlier, I didn't really care for the Klingon side of the story. And other than him being taken away and Laurel telling him that, whatever, you're gonna whatever, something's going to happen to you and so forth and so forth. I don't really remember him much from earlier in the season. I don't know, like he was Tecumseh's second, and then when he was supposed to be around, then what's his name, Cole, took charge. So to me, I don't really care for Vok, and I know he will be back, but I'm not really looking forward to it. I would be perfectly fine if we never saw him again and find out that Laurel did something else to him and that, but I don't know. That's just my opinion. As I stated, I don't care for the Klingon side of the story. So,
all right. What about Tyler now?
I hope that Tyler is not Vok. I know the speculations are out there and the theories, and even I'm buying into it somewhat, but I'm liking the Tyler character. I'm not liking the Tyler Burnham romance going on. I'm not caring for that. That happened way too fast. But if Tyler does end up being Vok, the only thing that I think would redeem it is I'm under the impression from what I've seen is Tyler thinks he is Tyler. Tyler, I don't think, is Vok in disguise. He could be Vok that everything's been changed and he'd be like a sleeper or whatever, that he doesn't even know he's Vok. And if that's the case, I'm hoping that Tyler, being around the humans and all that, even when he figures out that yes, he is Vok, he decides to do an Arnold Schwarzenegger in Total Recall. Whenever he finds out who he actually is, he decides to switch sides.
Yeah,
I'm hoping that's going to happen, because I like the Tyler character and I don't want him to be turn out to be a bad guy and do away with him. And I don't want to see the whole heartbreak thing with Burnham, because I think that's that whole relationship is ridiculous. But anyways,
Ruthie, what about you?
Tyler is not Vok. Okay. Vok is not Tyler. Period.
Okay.
I don't think, I don't know. I just think that that's, it's like, what? So this theory grew legs because people thought he was the same actor or something on Wikipedia, some whatever, blah, blah. It doesn't really matter, because I'm like, that's a totally, totally flimsy thing to base a fan theory on, I guess. I don't know. I just, it's silly.
There's a lot of coincidences, and you know, I think that's where, you know, if the character of Vok was listed as in the credits as Joe Smith, it probably wouldn't have gained the legs that it did. But the fact that Iqbal is Shahzad Latif's actual last name, like not his stage name, I think had something to do with it. But
yeah, well, that again,
and the timing,
whatever it was, is dumb. But okay. I didn't really care for, I mean, Vok, again, kind of like, okay, whatever. I don't know what's going on with him. I don't have any idea what she had in mind. It sort of felt like a weird shift, honestly, that whole where I'm going to do something to you, you're not going to like it. But I kind of feel like making him into a human sleeper agent isn't really, I mean, I think that goes a little bit beyond you're not going to like it, kind of, you know, I mean, I don't know. Like, yeah, I'm not going to like it, but I don't know. I don't know. I don't have, I can't really, I mean, maybe it's true, but to me, I feel like basing it on the actor having the same name or whatever is flimsy. That's, I mean, those things are contractual.
Right.
And has nothing to do with the storyline whatsoever. It's this, you know, there are SAG rules that dictate whatever things based on, you know, it's anyway.
Right.
That is the business side of the show, right. Not the show. And yeah. I like Tyler. I like Tyler as a character. I agree with Mark. I do not want him to turn out to be a bad guy, whether or not he was whatever, whatever. I like him as a character. I think he works. Yeah.
I know.
I don't really have an opinion about the relationship, really. I'm just kind of like, okay, well, whatever.
I know one thing is I will, if he does turn out to be Vok, then I will call BS on the whole, you know, he was a prisoner. He came back. The doctors had to have examined him.
Yeah.
And there's no way that if he was a Klingon that had been altered to look like a human, I don't think there's any way they could have fooled all the scanners and, you know, even with his DNA record would be on file and all that. I don't think there's any way they would have fooled them where they think that this is actually human Ash Tyler. Even if they took somebody that was dead and that died in the war and used his DNA and stuff like that.
Yeah.
I think there would have been some way that the medical would have found it.
You would think. Yeah. You definitely think. And it is worth saying that there is a Javed Iqbal on IMDb. So there, you know, potentially there was an actor, not Shahzad Latif, playing that character. And I completely agree with you, Ruthie. There are rules and you can't go by a different name if you don't. Well, you can, but you have to, I think you have to own the name or something. I don't know, but because you definitely do see sometimes actors going by different names and changing names, but the fact that there is another Javed Iqbal that's in IMDb, it is evidence against it. And I don't know. I just want a good story. That's my main thing.
Yeah, but in IMDb, I'm looking at it right now, and the Javed Iqbal. The only thing he's known for is his one credit in Star Trek Discovery, and every photo that they have of him is in the Klingon makeup.
There is another Javed Iqbal in IMDb, and that's where I found that if you look it up, he's got a credit from like 2015, but it's a different one, but makes you wonder why there would be two, you know, so I don't know. But
well, maybe it's a common name for whatever place that is.
There you go.
I mean, who knows? Honestly, and IMDb does that a lot. If that's the only thing that you have, then that's going to be your picture.
There are tons of mistakes in IMDb, and I always tell people, do not rely on IMDb, especially if you're looking in the future. Because you see all sorts of, you know, you'll see one of the characters on Star Trek Discovery. I think that Ensign Connor, who dies in the second episode there, the one that's visiting, Burnham in the yeah. brig and, you know, gets sucked out to space. He was supposedly on 15 episodes. Well, I don't think so. You know,
well, yeah, IMDb is one step away from Wikipedia.
Yeah. Well,
it's not really one step away. It is because yeah. I can go in and edit information. I have an IMDb user account.
Yep.
And when I see something is wrong, I go in and say, that's wrong and this is correct.
Yep.
And they have, it's just like Wikipedia. They have people that verify it too. So, I mean, I had a professor in school that told me that didn't tell me, she told the whole class that Wikipedia is perfectly fine because it's monitored by everybody.
Yeah.
The whole internet monitors it. So everybody looks on there and they're like, one person is like, no, that's wrong. And they correct it. And so that's how it's like collective knowledge. And
right.
Anyway.
Yeah. Adam, where are you standing with the whole, Tyler Vok issue and just, you know, Tyler in general?
I suffer from an acute case of disinterest. Tyler gets introduced as a character and then becomes integral to the crew all of a sudden. And I thought we had enough story threads going that we didn't need this other character. And it's also only halfway through the first season and we're already getting into romantic subplots and whatnot. I don't think it's necessary. So for me, I just want it to be put aside. We've got enough other things to focus on. And I have the same issue and I'd like to get into this next if we can. Mark, you've mentioned a couple of times how you just don't care about the Klingon side of the story. Mm-hmm. So this being an extension of that, I just don't really care that much, especially if he does turn out to be Vok, because I think there's been enough story told that seems to indicate otherwise, or at least the way the characters are portrayed, that if it does pull a 180 and yes, he was Vok the whole time, it's really straining credibility So I'd rather just focus on the other story points that they're getting onto. But Mark, since you have mentioned, why is it that the Klingon side of the story is not really hooking you?
It's not that I'm not enjoying the story. I'm just not enjoying watching it. I don't know if it's the subtitles. I don't know if it's like, I know it's not what the Klingons look like. It's just, I don't know. In all honesty, Klingons have never been my favorite in Star Trek. I know Ruthie and Brian, you said you've loved the Klingon. Klingons to me have always been, eh. You know, so to know that this show right now, at least in this half of the season, was heavily reliant on the Klingons. When I first found that out, it was kind of like, oh, well, okay, whatever. And anytime the Klingons are on screen, yeah, we have to do a lot of reading and that, but that part really doesn't bother me. It's just also, I've never paid attention to like the Klingon houses and the hierarchies and that through all. I mean, I'm a huge Star Trek fan. I've watched every single series, every single episode, but I still, when it comes to the Klingons, I don't really know how the Klingon Empire works and that. I never really paid much attention to it. So all this political, like, you know, this person died, so this one's taking over, and everything they're trying to do is just kind of like, okay, let's get on with the story. I want to know what's happening over on Discovery and for the rest of the show. So that's just the way I'm looking at it.
Yeah. What are you expecting in the second half? Like, what are you expecting in the next six episodes?
Well, I'm expecting to find out where they are and how they're going to get back, for sure.
That's a good start.
But some of the stuff that I really, and I don't know if they're going to address them or not, but little nitpicky things that I'm curious about is, let's look at the spore drive. We know that when the original series comes around, there's no spore drive. So we know that thing failed, and we know that the whatever that creature, tardigrade. They needed the tardigrade, and then they incorporated the tardigrade DNA in Stamets' character. But it seems like they're still telling Starfleet about this thing, because Starfleet's still expecting something, some sort of drive. So I want that to be wrapped up. I know that's just a small start, but for some reason that's bugging me, that the fact that Stamets is running it, and he was afraid that if he went back, then they're going to find out. And yet, what if Starfleet doesn't know, what sort of reports are Starfleet getting right now?
Yeah.
And that's something they never really touched on. So that's like a small thing that I really want answered. I want that put behind. It was fun. I enjoyed the whole spore drive thing, but I want that put behind them. But then if it is put behind them, what's the point of Discovery? Discovery, the whole point of it was to build this new propulsion system. And if we find out that it's no longer viable, does that mean that Discovery is no longer a viable ship? I don't know.
Good question.
Yeah. So that's one thing I want to look at. I want to see just more interactions. I'd like to get to know some of the other bridge crew. I mean, most of the other series, there was always a few faces we didn't really know, but most of the regular cast on the bridge, we eventually got to know them all. And like, there's that one girl, I think her name was Kayla or Kala or whatever, that she was on the Senjo, and she's the one that has that metallic thing on her forehead now that she didn't have when she was on the Senjo.
Yeah. Lieutenant Detmer is her name.
Detmer. Yeah.
Yeah.
I want to know something about her. Like, she always gives, Burnham these dirty looks, like she holds her responsible, but I want to know more about her. I want to know more about that other character that has that helmet thing, or was that on the Senjo?
That was on the Senjo, but but there's also the, what she, I guess, is a cyborg,
gray skin one.
Yeah.
Yeah. So I would like, you know, just like every other series, we got to know the bridge crew, and I feel that right now we know Lorca, we know Saru, and we know
Tyler
Burnham. And well, Tyler, yeah, now that he's on the bridge, but we don't know any of the rest of the bridge crew. And to me, that's not Star Trek. Star Trek, you know your bridge crew. And so I want to know more about them. As for the story, I don't know what the story is going on. And I just looking forward to whatever they give me. I mean, we've waited long enough for Star Trek. I'm happy that Star Trek's on the air. And that's, I mean, to me, that's the biggest thing.
Any kind of pizza is good pizza.
That's it.
What about you, Ruthie?
I just want more well-written things that are good, that I enjoy. That's all I want.
Amen to that.
I don't know. I just want them to, honestly, whenever it comes to TV, I don't really speculate about things that I want or what I want this to happen or that to happen. I mean, generally speaking, sometimes I do want something to go a certain way, but usually I just want them to tell me a good story and I want it to be well written and, plausible, believable within that universe that they've created. I want a well created universe, first of all. And I want them to tell me the story that they want to tell. I don't want them to cater or pander or whatever. But I want that story to be well done, I guess. It's usually what I want. Like, I'm so bad at speculating about what I think is going to happen or fan theories or whatever, blah, blah, blah. I'm really bad at that stuff. So I usually avoid doing it. So.
I know one other thing is I am enjoying that this is Star Trek is serialized. I'm enjoying that, like the stories continuing on, unlike other Star Trek, which was episodic. Although we are getting some episodic episode, like the Harry Mudd episode, which was a great episode. I love that episode.
Me too.
And, you know, so that was kind of an episodic one, but it played into the whole serialized story. Then there was the one on the planet. I didn't really care for that episode, but it still played into the whole serialized story. Speaking of the planet one, that's one that I was really disappointed that Sarud, there was no repercussions afterwards for what he did, because he basically mutineered himself. I was disappointed that there was no follow-up afterwards on how he behaved down on the planet. But I'm enjoying
that. Well, I guess because he didn't start a war, then, you know, he got a pass.
Yeah. Yeah.
Anyway, you were saying, sorry.
No, I was just saying, I'm enjoying that, you know, for this is the first time we've always had some story arcs that followed through, like, you know, the Borg, and there was always some stuff that would follow through over many episodes. But this is the first Star Trek that's actually a serialized season or show. And I'm enjoying that. I wasn't sure going in what I would think of that, because I've always liked the here's one story and at the end of the hour, the story's done. Or might be a two-part, the odd time it might be a three-part, but I'm enjoying this where the story's ongoing. And that's one of the things that I know when I'm telling people about Star Trek is that, you know, it's a really good story and it's ongoing from episode to episode. So if you like serialized things and you're already a Star Trek fan, you're going to like this even more.
Yeah, I do feel like this show is incredibly dense. I mean, we're having all this conversation over a series. It's only 9 episodes deep so far. And yet there's so much to talk about already that you're really getting, especially if you do the free trial, you're getting your money's worth by signing up for All Access, because there's just so much to chew on in just what we've seen so far. You know, looking forward to the next 6 episodes that round out the season, I can only imagine what they're going to come up with based on what the previous 9 have all managed to cram in. And even more like 7, if you think about it, because the first 2 episodes were basically a prologue. So our time on the Discovery is only 7 episodes deep. So we're getting almost as much in the second half of the season as we had in the first half.
Mm-hmm.
Yeah. And it's so deep. And I love that it is. I mean, I never thought that I would be talking like this about a Star Trek show that has these like thoughts and plot lines that extend way beyond, you know, episode to episode. And this contrasts, I guess, against, say, the Orville, which we agreed we weren't going to talk about. But I think that has also been quite surprising, actually. I've really enjoyed that. But
I'm loving the Orville.
Yeah.
Me too.
Yeah.
Same.
Yeah. So it scratches a different itch. But I think that there's such a woven tapestry of this show. And I love it. I really, really have grown to love this show. And, if I hadn't, I would have been surprised, but I don't know what the next six episodes are going to bring us, except, you know, I do, like you said, Mark, where are they? I expect that to get answered, and I expect something to be answered as far as Tyler and Laurel and all that. But beyond that, I don't know what's going to come, and I like that. I know that something's going to come, and I have the confidence at this point that it's going to be really good. Yeah. And I also say this, I didn't feel this way when we first reviewed it, but the second Mud episode, the time loop episode, I love that episode. It was so good. It was so good. And by the way, you deserve a podcast award for your voicemail. It was so amazing.
Yeah, that was pretty fun.
Yeah. So anyway,
I just thought of one more thing.
Okay.
The next half of the season, I want to get to know the chief medical officer, whoever he is.
Yes. And for that matter, you know what I almost expect them to do? They'll kill the CMO off screen and they'll just make Culber the CMO. Because there's been no explanation. And in the, what is it, Magic to Make the Sanest Man Go Mad, that episode 7, we see another doctor. Was that the CMO or was that just another doctor? We don't even know. We didn't get a name or anything out of the guy, but I agree with you, Mark. it's kind of a question at this point because it seems like everything goes to Dr. Culber, and yet he's not chief medical officer. No.
See, and I heard that the reason why, I mean, I heard it explained. I guess someone somewhere said it was a Lower Decks starship. Yeah. Or Star Trek episode, Star Trek series or whatever. But I'm like, but that doesn't make any sense because the important people do the important things. And so if you're telling a story about the not important people, then we should be watching mundane ho-hum episodes.
Right.
You know? Because you can't, I mean, they're not always going to go to the third in line medical officer for everything.
Right.
They're going to go to the, you know, like you said, the chief medical officer, he or she is going to be the person who's going to be getting all the action. And if there's so much action that there's spillover for, you know, ho-hum officer person to get it, then I don't know. The idea of that sounds like a good concept, but it's not really executable, I think, because there's a reason why we watch the bridge officers and we watch the head people in charge is because they're the head people in charge for a reason, because they get all the action.
Yeah. Mm-hmm. Yeah. Yeah. And it's worth noting that one of the other Star Trek Discovery podcasts is called Lower Decks. So they clearly thought that that's what the show was going to be about. I don't think that's really turned out to be the case. I mean, to some extent, I mean, you got Tilly, and Burnham obviously is no longer a commander. So, you know, she is, lower deck ish, but, you know, clearly, for someone on the lower decks, she's been awfully involved and had a lot of interesting things to do. So my last question, and this is more, I think, to Ruthie and Adam, because, Mark, you're in Canada and don't have the same issue with this, but I think all of us know Star Trek fans that have not grokked on to Star Trek Discovery. What are you telling them at this point?
I mean, it's good. I haven't really talked to that many people who aren't watching it, I guess.
No?
I've had one friend in particular who's been very curious about the series. Very, very heavy into Star Trek, but he just wasn't sure about the asking price, basically. You know, the whole thing of, is it worth paying for? And, you know, I told him exactly what you recommended early on, Brian. I said, you just wait until mid-season, get your trial signed up, check it out, and then you'll have enough information to see if you want to pay the ongoing fee to stay current with the series.
Yeah. And at this point, it's worth saying that, and I don't think this is going to be true until the 7th, but I think until like January 2nd or 3rd, CBS has a 1-month trial. I think if you use the offer code BINGE, and we don't get anything for recommending subscribing, but it's just worth saying that you can get a month trial now for CBS All Access, and you know, not only binge on the first nine, but also get to see, you know, two or three episodes when it comes back. And then, you know, by that time, if you don't like the show, I don't think you're going to. So anyway, I'm telling people to do just that. I tell them now is the time to sign up, you know, get the trial, watch it. And, you know, if you don't like it after the verse nine, okay, that's fine. But I think you have to get over yourself when it comes to, you know, old Star Trek and the Klingons and all that, and just accept it for what it is, which is a darn good show. So,
mm-hmm.
All right. So we're going to wrap it up. So Mark, first of all, thank you for doing this roundtable, and thank you for all of your
fun.
Thank you for all of the feedback. I think Adam and I would both agree that you've made our podcast better with it.
Oh, absolutely.
So
that means I have to keep on going?
Oh, I hope so.
Yes.
Yeah. So, you have a Solo Talk Media Network. So why don't you tell the others how they can reach you?
Yeah. Just like Brian and Ruthie and Adam, I'm a podcaster as well. I have the network at solotalkmedia.com where it's Solo Talk, which means I don't have co-hosts, so I don't have to worry about what Brian's going through right now. But I talk about shows. I just finished up Orphan Black, which was a great run. I did all five seasons of Orphan Black. And my two current shows are The Expanse, which will be coming back in the new year. And then later on in the summer, I also do a show on Killjoys. So if you like Killjoys, The Expanse, or if you're doing a rewatch or first time watch of Orphan Black, which I highly suggest you do, you can check out all of those podcasts anywhere podcasts can be found, or just find them all at solotalkmedia.com.
Yeah. And I will say, Mark, you do fantastic podcasts. I listened to each and every Orphan Black podcast as soon as it came out. I gave you feedback sometimes. I was always a little bit behind. So, you know, I'd watch like, you know, on a Wednesday or Thursday or something like that, too late to give feedback in. But, I definitely enjoy, your network. And, as I said, I gotta finish up, season two of The Expanse. But, if you love Mark's voicemails, you will love his network. Adam, I have already said it's going to be, sad to see you go, but hopefully you won't be a stranger, but you do another podcast. So why don't you remind people what your other podcast is?
Yeah, as we were discussing before we hit record tonight, it is okay to be a Star Wars and Star Trek fan all at once.
You're kidding.
Right?
Oh, man. Okay, I got a lot of movies to catch up on.
there's a new one out. You should probably check that out, actually. It's a pretty good watch. I do a Star Wars podcast called the Nerf Herder Council. It can be found at nhcpodcast.com. I do that with my brother and one of our friends. We always troop out to the Star Wars conventions together, so kind of bonded that way. Very conversational show. We're pretty much stuck in Last Jedi mode right now, and we will be for the next couple of episodes, but we've got a backlog of 2 years worth of shows to check out, so anybody wants to hear any random topic on Star Wars, we've probably covered it, and we've got more coming up. So much like Solo Talk Media, we can be found at pretty much any of the normal podcasting platforms like Apple Podcasts, Google Play Music, all those sorts of things. Or once again, nhcpodcast.com.
And you should mention your bi-weekly, right? On your podcast?
Yeah. Yeah, we were on a two-week cycle on that because, honestly, for the same reasons I'm handing off co-host duties here, that's only as often as we have time to do it.
Yeah. And I could ask Ruthie where she's going to be heard, but we already know. anyway, anything you want to say?
No. I mean, we'll say it in about a week or two.
Yeah. So we're recording this on December 28th. So it's coming back in a week and a half on the 7th of January. Nice little birthday present for me. My birthday's on the 6th. So, yeah. You're welcome. So thank you. So we'll be back. And, I think it's sad to see Adam go, but I think, we're gonna just keep going with Ruthie as my co-host. And, I think you guys will really enjoy, us. We had nice little, a collection of fans on the Walking Dead talk through, and I think you Star Trek listeners will enjoy our witty repartee going forward.
Our witty banter.
Yeah, our witty banter. So to submit your feedback to us, one way is to go to goldenspiralmedia.com/feedback. That's typically how we've been getting our voicemails. But you can submit text there. You can submit audio. There's a SpeakPipe widget, which you can use as well to submit feedback to us. There's a voicemail, 304-837-2278. You can send us feedback through our Gmail, which is StarTrekGSM@gmail.com. You can send us tweets at StarTrekGSM. But the best way, and most of the feedback that we get, most of the interaction that we get with you guys, is through our Facebook group, which is at facebook.com/groups/StarTrekDiscoveryPodcast. The feedback will be due 6 p.m. Eastern, 5 Central on that Monday after the episode has aired. One of the best ways to support us, if you want to support us, is to share when we post stuff on Facebook and Twitter. Share it. Retweet. That helps, get more people to know about us. And when the episode goes out, it's a good time to binge watch the first 9. So if you got some friends that are picking up the show, good time to tell them about the podcast. Go to goldenspiralmedia.com/Apple to find us on Apple Podcasts. That's a quick way to get there. And you can leave us a rating or review to help get the word out and help get us noticed by other people looking for the many Star Trek podcasts that are out there. Subscribe on whatever podcast client that you use. That'll make sure you get the next episode. Support the network, though. Go to goldenspiralmedia.com/support for the various different ways. The next episode, I had it.
Despite Yourself is the next one.
Yeah, Despite Yourself.
Despite Yourself, yeah. I'll say that next episode, unless we get bombarded with feedback, we will probably, Ruthie and I, go through part 2 of the Montefescu feedback that we got from the last episode. He responded to us because Adam and I weren't too sure if he was actually listening or not, but fact he was. So Ruthie and I will cover that unless we get so much feedback that we can't cover it. But yeah, so the next episode is Despite Yourself on January 7th, January 8th on Netflix, if you get it that way. With that, until next time, I'm Brian.
And I'm Adam.
I'm Mark.
And I'm Ruthie.
And good night.
Bye.
Journey into the endless realities of your mind with the Electric Dreams podcast.
From the genius of Philip K. Dick comes a series of short stories adapted for the small screen by a creative team including Ronald D. Moore and Bryan Cranston.
And each episode of the anthology series will be dedicated to one of Philip K. Dick's stories. This series will expand the realm of possibility beyond the realm of reality and make one take a deeper look into their own existence.
Join Wayne and Steve on Electric Dreams Podcast
on Golden Spiral Media.